Really is Brad Marchand's world, and we're all just along for the ride. If you didn't know before, you certainly do now. Welcome to the program, everybody. Good morning, hockey. With your host, Tassos Kyrkos. Bruins take down Toronto 4-2. Brad Marchand was so good in that game. All three games last night were really tight, really close contests. LA beats Edmonton 5-4 in overtime and tied that series up, courtesy of an Anze Kopitar winner, and Vegas beat Dallas 3-1. Jack Eichel gets the empty netter there. Vegas wins both games in Dallas and is now up 2-0. San Jose, let's go to their coach, David Quinn. We're going to bring on Jack Skilly in a little bit here. Former National Hockey League vet, 368 games. Hawks, Panthers, Blue Jackets, Avalanche, and Canucks. He was also a national champion with his hometown Wisconsin Badgers, too, back in 2006. He now lives in Utah, where he runs the Jack Skilly Hockey Academy. We'll talk NHL Utah. I'm curious as to what the feeling is for hockey in the state, what youth hockey is like there. A bunch of the players went out there yesterday. They had a big fan gathering at the arena. Really looked incredible. Looked really passionate. Looks like everybody's excited for hockey in Utah. So we'll hear from him on all of that. Two games on the go-round for you tonight. A pair of Game 3s out east. Panthers Lightning shifts to Tampa. And the New York Islanders will host Carolina. Both teams, both home teams, really needing wins to avoid the dreaded 0-3 series deficit. Click like if you're listening to this. Leave 5 stars, leave a review. Wherever you are getting this, your favorite pod catcher. Thank you so much for doing that. And thank you again for being here. But I think we have to start with this Boston and Toronto game. That was, for all intents and purposes, one of the games of the night, although that LA-Edmonton game certainly gave the first one a run for its money. We mentioned it was the Brad Marchand show, and it certainly was, but there's a lot to unpack here. Quiet first period, Mitch Marner over to Nyes for the Leafs goal. Domi takes down Swayman. McAvoy takes down Matthews. Brad Marchand trips Tyler Bertuzzi, and then Trent Frederick scores. Tough one for Samsonov to give up. Jake DeBrusk gets one again at the start of the third period. He's been so good this series, too. Just a really impactful player. Giving credence to the thought that the playoffs is a new season for everybody. Doesn't matter how your regular season went, if it was hot or if it was cold. This is a whole fresh new slate for you to be able to rewrite the story of your season, and Jake DeBrusk is certainly doing that. Tyler Bertuzzi ties it at 2 right off the skate, and you think the Leafs have momentum. And then it was Brad Marchand time, gets himself alone, not being covered, and he buries one. No stick for Ilya Samsonov on that play, too, but Boston goes up 3-2, and then Brad Marchand would also add the empty netter for his third point of the night. That was just such an incredible game from him. Really did the talk and then walked the walk. Swayman was excellent again. You got to start him in game 4, right, on Saturday? You got to at that point. I know you do the back and forth, but Swayman's been too good to not put in for consecutive games here. Really tough physical game, not even counting the funny business. I thought Joel Edmondson was really good for Toronto, covering a lot of mistakes, shot blocks, even joining the rush at times. He was very, very good in that one. No William Nylander in this game either for Toronto. We will wait and see about him maybe being available for Saturday. And as far as Toronto goes, it was a good game, tough game to lose. You know, the fourth line of Duerr, Kampf, and Reeves all had been solid as a trio, individually as well. And for Boston, outside of the stellar play of Brad Marchand and Jeremy Swayman, I think the story goes to Charlie McAvoy and how huge he was. The Bruins had some youth stepping in, playing their first game on defense in the NHL playoffs, Mason Lowry and Parker Weatherspoon, and they had shaky moments. As to be expected, playing in your first Stanley Cup playoff game, that certainly happens. But Charlie McAvoy really did a lot to put that defense on his back and lead by example. It was just really good, really physical, creating chances. Great. I mean, you know, this is one of the best passers out there for Boston, especially. It was a good game. Boston takes a 2-1 series lead. And now we wait for Saturday, much to the chagrin of Boston head coach Jim Montgomery, who lamented in a press conference yesterday before the game that Boston is having to spend an extra day in Toronto, even though they're the team with home ice in this series. So we wait for game four in that one. Like I said, for Toronto, you got to hope that William Nylander comes back, although that has been very, very interesting to monitor from afar. So that is that game. Boston takes a 2-1 series lead in that one. Second game of the night, Vegas and the Dallas Stars. Vegas wins both games in Dallas. Jack Eichel hits the empty net. Noah Hanifin gets the game winner, and Vegas wins 3-1. The defending Stanley Cup champs are up on Dallas. That's a tough game for Dallas. I mean, you didn't lose it the way that you lost it in the first game. It was a different type of loss. That was more of a suffocating game by Vegas. Jake Ottinger had a great bounce back. Jason Robertson scores again for Dallas, which has to be a good sign. And here's an interesting note. Jason Robertson in his career has 9 career Stanley Cup playoff goals. 7 of them are against the Vegas Golden Knights. So he knows how to put the puck in the back of the net against Vegas. He had 5 against them last season. For Vegas, this is just what they do. And Dallas has to be pretty frustrated right about now because they've played 2 pretty good hockey games. I wouldn't say both of them have been perfect. Dallas did a lot more to create some other opportunities. Logan Thompson made some really good saves for Vegas. But these moves that Vegas made are showing them to be the deepest team in hockey. And they are facing a team that wants to be billed as that, but is not currently. Stars played with some desperation. They outshoot Vegas in the first period. They open the scoring on the Robertson goal, but March, so getting 182 seconds later definitely does not help. Second period was all Vegas. Dallas got their chances in the third, but before that, it was all said and done and over. I don't have the exact stat in front of me. I had it yesterday, but the statistics of people, of teams that win the first 2 games on the road, I think they have something like a winning percentage of over 85%. I thought I remember hearing that the losing side of that stat was like 11%. I could be wrong, but Vegas has a really strong grip on this series. Dallas is going to be hard-pressed to make a comeback here. But we will see. Game four for that one goes underway on Saturday. Game 3 for that one goes underway on Saturday. Long week here. Long week here around the playoffs. Just a lot of games up late every night. And we will get game 3 for that series Saturday night. The last game of the night was the Edmonton Oilers taking on the LA Kings. LA really came out hot. Anze Kopitar gets the overtime winner. And LA really did a good job turning the page, I thought. I even thought that as much of a statement as it was for Edmonton to blow out Los Angeles the way they did in game 1, I think it was as much of a statement for Los Angeles to, one, get out early in this game, jump out to a 2-0 lead over 5 minutes left in the first. It was very much a statement by Edmonton to make the comeback that they did. You're down 3-1 in the game, you're down 4-3 in the game, and you show the resiliency to do that and come back. Dylan Holloway was really good for Edmonton. I'm almost very surprised at the level of play we've gotten from Dylan Holloway over the last couple of weeks here, and the fact that that has stretched into the playoffs is only a good thing for Edmonton. And look, the Stars were the Stars for Los Angeles. Adrian Kempe was really good. Kevin Fiala was really good. Quinton Byfield was very good for Los Angeles. You know, that was a great game. Even Drew Doughty was really good on the back end. He got a goal himself. And then Anze Kopitar, the overtime winner, doing what he does, getting an overtime winner in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I saw a funny tweet and it said, Anze Kopitar gets an overtime winner in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Is this 2010? No, it is not. It is 2024. And with that, Anze Kopitar becomes the oldest player in franchise history to get an overtime goal during the playoffs. Previous mark, Justin Williams, 32 years, 243 days in game one of the 2014 Stanley Cup final. So we're going to bring on Jack Skilly in a couple of moments here. And then we'll talk a little bit more about that Edmonton-LA game. We'll jump into the games tonight. I am really looking forward to both of them. That Florida Panthers game is going to be really, really good tonight, and to see the type of response that we get from Tampa Bay. Jack Skilly played for Florida. I do want to ask about the Florida Panthers. See what it was like not only playing there, but with the market and the youth hockey, and how that has grown into a large hub for the sport. So we look forward to that pretty soon. Other than that, also just like the fan thing, if you haven't seen the fan thing from Utah yesterday, they brought all the players out, and boy, did that community show up. All
right,
Tassos,
we got them right now.
So we're now joined by NHL veteran Jack Skilly, Blackhawks, Panthers, Blue Jackets, Avalanche, and Canucks. How are you doing today, Jack? Thanks for doing this.
I'm doing well, guys. Thanks for having me. How are you?
We're doing great. Amazing. We're doing a lot better now. So you also run the Jack Skilly Hockey Academy. And I want you to paint us a picture here. What is the NHL stepping into exactly? What is the hockey landscape like in Utah, maybe for us? The hockey scene like there? Is the game as big? Is it growing? Paint us a little bit of a picture here.
Well, it's, you know what, the game over the last 5 years, I've lived in Utah only about 5 years now. And over the last 5 years, it's grown pretty fast. You know, given the circumstances and the maybe, you know, the overall lack of interest over the last decade and a half or whatever. But over the last couple of years, especially, that we've seen an exponential growth here in the game. And with the NHL moving in, we're expecting it to explode. The welcome party, the welcome party yesterday at the Delta Center was one of the most amazing responses I've ever seen by a city for an NHL team. And I think the players felt it, the coaches felt it. I know from texting with a few people, they certainly loved their experience yesterday. So it's going to be really interesting to see like the consistency over time of Utah showing up for these players.
That's a really interesting thing that you mentioned with the consistency. And so you're from Madison, you played at Wisconsin. People there are really, really passionate and almost would die for their sports teams. What's the relationship like between people from Utah and their sports teams? Is it, do you think that there's going to be able to be that consistency? Or is that going to be kind of something that the hockey team needs to work on or do through something like winning?
You know, honestly, I just think sports in general, Utah has consistently shown support for any sports that are in Utah. I live in Park City, and my friends and I, we always laugh. It's, you know, you can't swing a cat in Park City without hitting an Olympian. So it's just one of those chunks of the world where there's a lot of athletes, former athletes, that live here in Park City, Salt Lake City as well. You still have Olympians training at the Utah Olympic Oval. The speed skaters from all over the world training all summer. It's a place where people are very active. Ever since this NHL became a thing, moving here, everybody's been talking about it. So there's a buzz. And like I said, I think the proof is in the pudding. Yesterday, with the welcome party, there was a sellout in the building. Very, very loud. as a former player myself, I've never experienced anything like that. When it comes to the youth hockey in this area, I think that's only going to keep improving. And I think, I know Ryan Smith has plans for youth hockey, and a lot of us hockey people in the state are excited for those plans to roll out. We understand that the dust needs to settle a little bit, for them to get things in order and get probably prepared for the draft, get staff hired before youth hockey becomes, something to focus on.
Talk a little bit more maybe about the state of youth hockey there. You know, you're really involved with your hockey academy there. You see it on a day-to-day basis. And you've seen it, what it's like in other places, you know, where you grew up too. And Chicago here is very popular, obviously up in Canada, hockey is what it is there. Is youth hockey even already at a point where maybe if they had expanded to a different market, you'd kind of be starting from scratch a little bit more?
I think there's a foundation here. They had been sniffing out Salt Lake City. I mean, it's pretty obvious with the preseason games going on every single year.
Yeah.
I attended a few of those. They had a good attendance. You have the Grizzlies in town for the pro team that did consistently good attendance. So you had pro teams going on for kids to look up to. The programs in the state, you know, have done a fairly good job given the resources they have without the NHL being in this town or this vicinity. So, like I said, I really think with the youth landscape, when an NHL team moves into town like this, it brings a lot of resources and in a lot of different ways. And also, you know, for the kids, like, let's remember here, like the dream, it's the dream, right? Yeah. So like, when a kid's growing up and he has the dream right in his backyard, I mean, it becomes more realistic, right? So I think that's something as a former player and, you know, growing up, you mentioned growing up, me growing up in Wisconsin in the Midwest, like the dream was very alive for me. Growing up in Madison, I was a huge Blackhawks fan my whole life. You know, I love watching Chelios play. And I remember Paul Coffey being on the team and first game, my first game, was when I was 12 at the United Center watching those guys play. So these kids having an opportunity to come to an NHL arena, see some world-class talent right in front of their eyes is going to spark the dream in their head. And then it's going to make them realize like, hey, I can do this too. And for me, when I'm a youth coach in my academy, the main thing that I'm trying to grow and cultivate is the mind of the player. And emotional maturity and how to handle failure and just believing in yourself and overall confidence and having fun with the game. I mean, the NHL brings all of those things into town. Yeah. And the best part about it is just it brings relevant, really true relevant hockey people into that area as well. So these kids are going to get some really great resources over time as people move into town because they're taking Salt Lake City seriously now as a hockey area, you know? So it's really exciting. It's really exciting to watch. And you got some youth organizations in the area that they're going to, you know, if they're not already working together with other people, they're going to be forced to and collaborate and really focus on the kids and grow the game together. So I'm just all around, like I'm stoked for these kids more than anybody. And more than anything. So we'll see what happens.
You spent 2 years in Columbus and you spent 3 years in Florida, and that's where I got to watch you play personally. Columbus has always had a pretty dedicated and passionate group of fans there. Florida's been sort of growing into that, crescendoing it into it almost to become what it is right now. Packed, loud barn, pretty educated hockey fan base there. Kids getting drafted to playing in the NHL. Two-parter here for you. One, could you or did you see that down in South Florida when you were there? And two, can Utah sort of become that?
Well, I don't know. When I was in South Florida, it was a little bit different of a landscape. Yeah. I'm trying to be serious here, but the reality is I think I was plus something going from Chicago when I was traded, and then I ended up minus on the year, I think in like 13, 14 games. So that wasn't very fun as a player. But yeah, the game was still relatively new down there in South Florida. The South Florida is a little different, right? Because you got a bunch of people from all over the planet living down there just in the winter alone, or they're not really from there. This it's you know, kind of rare to bump into somebody that's like a born and raised Floridian down there, just with all the hodgepodge of people and playing for the Panthers too. I think the Panthers over the course of the like last, you know, 5 or 6 years of, or 7 years or longer, have done a really good job of growing the game in their area. I think that was like after I had left and like David Booth, all those guys had left, because the current state for us, like in Florida playing for the Panthers, was you'd attend a game. And I always tell people this, and it'd be virtually empty for, you know, yeah, home games against, I don't know, like I couldn't name you a team that I guess didn't matter to the crowd, but then you'd play like Philly or New York, the Rangers, or Carolina, or like whoever, Quebec, you know, or, sorry, not Quebec, Montreal. So I'm, all the people from Quebec are there. It's basically a sold out crowd, like Toronto, sold out crowd, Boston, sold out crowd, all their fans.
Yeah.
So like we would go into the building in a home game and we just would feel like, oh my God, we're on the road. So it was a tough place to play for a little while there. So the Panthers, like tip your hat, like they've done an amazing job growing the game in their area and growing their fan base and making it consistently winning helps. So they're going to be a huge factor in the playoffs this year. So I think that helps. And you look at what happened in Tampa, they, you know, make a couple Stanley Cup runs and, you know, the game starts exploding down there.
Yeah.
Right. So it's all centered around winning, right? Like if you're winning and you create excitement around the game, the kids see it, kids want to play hockey, mom and dad want to sign them up. They're willing to pay more willing to pay hundreds of dollars for equipment to start up. And, you know, there you go. You get the ball rolling.
Do you think that Utah could quickly, maybe even as soon as the summer, be a possible destination spot for UFAs that hit the market? They're looking for a different place. You know, we've seen some guys bounce around, and it seems to be that Ryan Smith wants to put some money in and make this team better. Do you think maybe this is a good spot that free agents are going to look at and be like, I want to go live in Utah?
I mean, most certainly. I mean, Utah's Park City's basically, if they play out of the Delta, you're talking a 30-minute drive down the canyon, which, you know, can be a little dicey during the winter. Okay. But they do a really good job here with plowing the roads. Like, usually by the time the players are leaving, the roads have been plowed, you know, a couple times. Like, I used to have to do, you know, practices early in the morning during a snowstorm. I made it just fine. So I think that would be probably the number one concern for players living in Park City. But when it comes to Park City or just even the base of the canyon, there's some really good properties, you know, all over Salt Lake City. But yeah, I mean, if they elect to live in Park City, this is a year-round spot. I mean, this is awesome. A place that you live. Yeah, you live and you're like, I don't want to leave. You live in the Wasatch Mountains. You're, like I said, you're in a place in the world where people want to travel to spend time to break free. I laugh with my wife all the time. I'm like, why don't we join the party every now and again, like once a month, and pretend to be on vacation? This is where everyone seems to go on vacation anyways. So, you know, I love Park City. The coolest part about Park City is the people that actually live here, long-term, like year round, are very tight knit. This is still a community. Our neighbors, we all know each other. We care about each other. You know, our families hang out together at the parks. You know, like there's certainly some really cool neighborhoods in this area that have that family oriented community. So the players with the, you know, the wives and kids, like I think Park City is a very strong option for them. And I'm confident that when they move here, I know everybody wants to go home in the off season, but I honestly am confident that they're going to want to stay here.
A lot of people have voiced concerns of the NHL maybe moving to a market that's a little bit smaller than the one that they left. Well, frankly, a lot smaller, although a lot of people aren't really counting the surrounding areas of Salt Lake City when they do that. You played in Arizona as an opponent, albeit not under the conditions they were playing in currently at Mullet. One, do you have any thoughts on Arizona as an NHL market? And, you know, two, should we really be discussing population size when Salt Lake City is more populous than maybe some other NHL markets like Raleigh and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a loaded question. Like, I don't know. Like, with Arizona, that whole situation playing there, like, I never played, even when I was playing against Arizona, I don't remember playing in front of a packed barn.
Yeah.
So I think they always had an attendance issue. And, you know, that's, it's a tough market in the South, like Southwest like that. You know, you have LA, you know, pretty fairly close by, and you got, you know, some San Jose, and you got all these other teams, and then Vegas drops down, and it's like, yeah, I mean, I think Arizona had plenty of time as a city and as a population to save that team and show them that they wanted them there. And I think they proved otherwise over the course of time. So I think Salt Lake City's done the opposite. I think they've shown like, hey, we want a team. We're ready for a team. Regardless of numbers for USA Hockey registrations, I think we have like north of 2,500. I thought it was around 3,000 for kids right now for youth hockey. You know, and there's a bunch of people that love the game of hockey and love watching it. Maybe their kids don't play it, but they probably will now.
Yeah.
But you know, when you look at that, if you look at the Western expansion, you know, look at Denver back in like 2008. Right? Like, if you look at that market, just living wise, population wise, I think there was a time when like 100,000 people were moving to Denver like every day.
Yeah.
It was just like insane. Right. So it just exploded. And I have friends that still live in Denver and they're like, I can't breathe here anymore. It's too congested. People are just, there's too many people for the area. Like, I want to move out. And I think a lot of people are feeling that in the West and they're looking for cities to move to. And I think Salt Lake City or like its area is one of those places, right? Because there's people that move to Park City consistently from California. There's people that move consistently from Texas to here. And we have new neighbors, it feels like, every single day up in Park City alone. And Salt Lake City is a cheaper place to live. So you have all these areas like Ogden and Draper and Harriman and all these places in the Valley or Kearns where the Oval is. And you have, you know, Provo and that surrounding area over here. And they're all about, an hour radius drive, right? So an inside of an hour radius for the most part. And people here are used to traveling that far, just kind of the West. It's just how it is. So I really think like, this population in Salt Lake City is going to continue to grow. And I think Ryan Smith is onto something. I think he sees it. I think he's smart and knows that this city is going to keep growing and expanding over time. People are going to start moving here more consistently than they already have. And, then you have the hockey world, right? So there's going to be people moving here I've already talked to, you know, five or six people that have decided to move into the state to help grow the game.
Wow.
For youth hockey or be a part of the NHL, NHL's process. So yeah, like it's already happening. We're a week in, you know?
That's incredible. I mean, the players really seem fired up about it. You could even see guys like Clayton Keller that don't really show too much emotion. You could tell he was just really wrapped up in the excitement of it. And, you know, I think the prospect of going from somewhere like Arizona, where certainly some of these guys were unhappy, knowing that, you know, their buddies in other markets are, you know, a bit more beloved, they're treated better. They're happy to be turning a page and going to a whole new situation here. So this seems like a slam dunk. Is there anything we're missing? Like, is there any gap in the market when it comes to hockey, or is this just a slam dunk waiting to happen?
Well, I mean, with anything, there's red tape, right? And I think, you know, people need to be patient, you know, like when you talk about things like youth sports too, like this is what my mentors talk about all the time. Like the number one problem, like if you listen to my latest episode of my podcast, which I'm not really putting a ton of time and effort into it, to be honest, it's just a fun little thing to do and interview friends. And, you know, if we have a good guest on like Troy Ward, the last episode talking about this topic, it's a great opportunity for parents and kids and coaches to listen to a guy with that much experience explain what he thinks is wrong with with youth development, or maybe weak points of youth development nowadays. And he brings up some very strong points, and I agree. It's, you know, patience. Technology's moving faster than it ever has. We have everything at our fingertips, and it keeps improving. And with that comes that like little taste of entitlement that, like, you know, development's the same and it's not, right? So like things take time. And one of my favorite Troy Ward quotes is, when he's on the show, is, you know, development's in a crock pot, not a microwave. So I think if you know, Ryan Smith and his team really, you know, take their time and really develop a qualitative product, which I believe they're doing all the right things. They're trying to, you know, from what I hear from my resources, they're really trying to make sure that this is going to, you know, land well, and it's going to be consistent whatever they build. You know, whether that's practice facilities or, you know, improving the economy down in the Salt Lake City area, improving the building over time. You know, I don't really know their specific plans, but it sounds like they have some big plans, and those plans are going to take time. So I think they're doing the right thing, and I think we just all need to be patient when it comes to, you know, youth hockey and its growth. Like, obviously, being in Utah for the last 5 years, it felt like hockey was still in its infancy, right? Like, you still had people that maybe played a high level here and there, and then you had people that didn't play a high level that were involved with youth hockey. You know, youth hockey is a very interesting, it's a strange bird when it comes to relationships. What I learned from, I'd say, the last 11 months, like, the NHL is about relationships, like healthy relationships. Mm-hmm. Like, they care about you. Like, you'll call a guy from the NHL and it's a check-in. It's just, how are you? Like, how's your family? What's going on? Like, you know, you're not calling for a job. You're just, hey, how are you? Being a good person. And everybody's got time for you in the NHL level. But in youth hockey, it seems to be like an endemic when it comes to on a national scale. Like, people are just competitive. They just are possessive of kids, and they don't get along, and they don't want to collaborate, because really they don't understand at the highest level possible, like, you got to collaborate. So everybody in the NHL, like, if you use that as an elite example of like it's the best hockey league on the planet, right? Obviously, you have the best athletes and some of the best athletes in the world competing day in, day out on the fastest surface on the planet, right? But they all get along. They all know each other, right? Because they need it to be. Like, in order for it to be healthy and to be able to make moves and transactions and trades, and, hey, what if you get fired, you know, and you got a bad reputation? Well, you're not getting a job. So, like, everyone works together to, like, for the greater good, and they've all bought in. Like, if you're a staff member or you're working in the NHL, it's chances are, like, you're there because you're an elite human being.
Yeah.
Right. For the most part, you know, like, there's, I'm sure there's bad eggs in every profession. Right. But, you know, with youth hockey, that seems to be a department that is frustrating as a former player, watching it, where, you know, all you got to do, everyone's got 5 minutes, you know, if you need help, you just reach out. And I think what I've learned as a coach, like, coming from a player to a coach and trying to prove myself as a coach and really prove myself to myself as a coach, I've learned that, you know, you start becoming a better coach, not a great good coach or a great coach, just a better coach. You start improving when you realize you like what you don't know, right? So, like, I know what I don't know, and then now I have the humility to admit that to myself. So now I'm like, I'm trying to go get answers to those questions that I've, you know, come across, right? By reaching out to mentors, by reaching out to people in the NHL level or collegiate level, or, you know, maybe it's a person that created a youth program that was successful, like, while I was a kid, and just learning from them of, like, what that all looks like, and try to collect all the information you can and take some nuggets here and there from every conversation. And then you just holistically develop as a coach as well. And I've realized that, like, you know, over the last 5 years, I've needed to develop as a coach. Everyone's known me as the player. Well, if I want to coach at a high level, if I want to, do anything at a high level, I need to adapt and grow and change over time. So I would say that for the youth development in this state, in Utah, like, I think the NHL is going to bring a lot of, it's going to change the culture of hockey, right? And the culture needs to be a growth mindset. It needs to be a collaboration mindset, and it needs to be for the kids, period. No personal egos, no nothing. Like, we're putting this together. We're working together. Nobody's fighting over the best kids in the state. Nobody's recruiting for the best 10U double A hockey team. Like, who cares? Work on development. Let's work together. Let's put together vertical integration and make sure that that pyramid of success for these kids is highly visible. It's understood by parents, especially the new parents that are coming into the grassroots level of the game that have maybe never played the game before. They have no idea what they're doing. Get them the resources they need to help them understand, like, little Johnny really is fired up about hockey. Like, where do I go? What do I do? Well, go to a local rink, talk to a local staff member. They'll put you in touch with a youth organization. We'll have a brochure for you, or we got things, stickers up on the wall explaining that process, whatever. And you have resources in the state that are willing to take a phone call to explain things to you. Just really working together and collaborating to make sure that people get to the right place, especially at the entry level of this sport. And not to be too long-winded here with this answer, but if you really look at hockey, hockey's a really expensive sport, mm-hmm. right? You have a lot of gear to purchase. You have, you know, ice is limited, so ice costs can be high. It'll be interesting to see, like, what happens with ice costs now that the NHL's here. Which obviously, with people running programs like myself, well, that increases our cost, right? Like, it's just business 101. But I'm the type of guy that's like, I don't want to increase my cost because I know there's a threshold there.
Yep.
Right. So, like, if somebody is like, my kid's fired up about hockey, but I can't afford the gear. Well, sorry, buddy, you're going to play basketball, or you're going to play football, or you're going to play baseball, because all, you know, for basketball, all you got to do is show up with short sneakers and a t-shirt on, and here's your basketball, and go shoot some hoops. Right. Or like, with football, it's, we got a trailer full of gear, and we got a storage unit full of gear. You either borrow it for the practice, or you borrow it for the season, you give it back.
Yep.
Right. So that barrier of entry needs to be figured out for hockey, because that is in my opinion, why sports like football, baseball, basketball are so popular, because they're so accessible, like, financially for a lot of people in this country. And a lot of people are struggling right now, you know, with inflation and a lot of things going on. So I think, like, that's one thing that I think the NHL, you know, could probably look into and say, how do we make this game cheaper for everybody, especially when it comes to youth sports?
That's really interesting, actually. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that whole answer there. So I have to say, that being said, Utah is still fresh enough of a market that you haven't had the infiltration of Instagram skills coaches yet. That is one of my pet peeves out there. Everybody who now tries to paint themselves as a skills coach on the internet. You haven't had that,
yeah,
that there quite yet?
No, we have it there. We have it here. I like to call this private lesson state. I don't really believe in private lessons, to be totally honest. I started out here with private lessons, and I thought that was just kind of like, you know, being a former player, like, well, that's just kind of what people do. And the more I did it, the more uncomfortable I got with it. And because I just feel private lessons are for, like, the elite player that, like, knows for sure that he wants to be a hockey player, and he's focusing on the right things, like, away from the rink as well, like, mm-hmm. holistically as an athlete, whether that's playing other sports, or he's turning into, like, a relevant hockey player that needs those things. Someone can argue that too and say, well, they still need private lessons for, like, skill development. But what they're talking about, what you're bringing up, and what's annoying to watch is the soft skill, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's soft skill, skating around cones. Like, I don't know, you know how many internet, you know, videos or Instagram videos I've seen of soft skill where, like, I'll go on a guy's page and I'll go, okay, let's see if this guy's like how good he really is. And I'll look for a drill where he actually includes a pass. And it's pretty rare, right? Like, and you're like, well, passing's like
the right most up there with skating. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like right up there with skating with this sport. And so you're going to teach this kid how to have his head down, skating around cones. Cones don't move. And, you know, yeah, we're going to develop his hands and stick skills and his ability. But what happens when, you know, he's got one player coming at him or he's got two players coming at him and it's he's got to make a play in 2 seconds. Like, have you taught him pressure reads? Have you taught him, you know, things like that? But you can't learn that in really a private lesson setting. You in a one-on-one, you gotta be in a small group, right? So like you can teach things like hard skill, which would be like, you know, situational awareness or wall play or heavy bottom hand or, you know, how to properly defend a one-on-one, how to properly, you know, turn a player's toe caps on a one-on-one, right? Like, how to create space, how to search for contact. Like, you know, I may be saying things that you guys don't understand, but like, if you watch players in the NHL, like contact's their friend in a way, right? If you watch like Leon Draisaitl in the playoffs, like he's constantly searching for contact when he's protecting the puck, like he's trying to put you on his hip, right? So like he's in control of you at that point. So you're teaching all these things, but that's easier to teach in a group setting. But with these Instagram coaches, it's all soft skill. And I think a lot of people would agree in the hockey world that hockey players are not getting any smarter with the soft skill development stuff. You're definitely getting more skilled, but you know, like these kids need to be taught how to play together. And you know, once you develop hockey IQ, which is also a thing that's driving me mental on Instagram right now, is like not only the soft skill, but like you see the guy that's like selling his program on Instagram, claiming that he can teach your kid hockey IQ. And you're like, dude, you can't teach hockey IQ.
No.
Because hockey IQ is subjective to that player. Right? Like it's totally dependent on their athletic ability. It's totally dependent on their own, like, you know, processing speed as a brain. It's their own ability. It's their own subjective ability or viewpoint on like what the puzzle is and how to figure out that puzzle. You know, hockey IQ is completely dependent on athletic ability and your internal fuel. And, you know, things like that, it's just tied to your identity as a hockey player. Like Jonathan Toews, we had him on our show a long time ago, and he was saying like he strongly believes that people play to their personality, and I agree with him.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I agree. If you look at guys that have won the cup, like there are people out there that talk about skating. Like you got to work on skating all the time, and that's the most important skill. And I agree, it's a very important skill in hockey. But like, what about Patty Maroon? You know, yeah, like no, Patty Maroon,
so fair.
Isn't the best skater. He's got 3 Stanley Cups, you know, and he's a spark everywhere he goes. So like, you know, he's a high hockey IQ. Patty Maroon is like, he can play heavy minutes in the bottom six. He can play skilled minutes in the top six. Like he's a good hockey player. He's not the greatest skater, but he gets the job done. Right. So like it can be argued that, you know, like skating and this soft skill isn't as important as your brain, right? So like when it comes to hockey IQ, I always say like hockey IQ cannot be taught, but it can be learned,
right?
And it needs to be learned subjectively in a like a cognitive setting in a small area game, or you know, incentives and restrictions in that game. So you're just basically creating this puzzle for this player over time consistently, and they're just slowly figuring out like, oh, I got to jump to space. Mm-hmm. Oh, I got to move toward the puck. I got to move away from the puck. Looks like you're teaching them scenarios where they maybe got to anticipate the play. And, you know, hockey IQ is anticipation. And it's almost like hockey IQ to me is like, it's like cheating, right? Like you're kind of in that gray area where like you can jump and be ahead of the play, or you can recover defensively. but you're just like in that little pocket, and you've arrived on time out there to the degree where if you need to go and lead the rush, like you're there. But if you need to recover and stay above a player, if you know, between them and your net, like you're there as well. So like, it's just the, you know, hockey IQ is just so subjective. So it drives me crazy to see all this soft skill being taught. And then these people basically that clearly do not know what hockey IQ is. And they're selling it on people, parents that know less than they do about the game, that are, you know, willing to shell out all this money for them to be somehow taught hockey IQ.
Trying to make a quick buck. Jack, you and I could talk for a long time about this. We'll wrap with this one here. Any thoughts, takeaways from the playoffs at all? Series that maybe caught your attention, old teammates you're cheering for or watching with any sort of insight?
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching that Dallas series closely.
Yeah.
You know, like I got some old teammates that are on that team, and I'm really pulling for them. And I you know, watching Dallas all year, like you're like, that is a Stanley Cup team on paper and the way they play. So I'm just kind of surprised in a way that, you know, they're down two right now in that series. You know, obviously I think everyone's eyes are on Toronto right now, and if they can figure it out. But no, I'm watching every game really. Like I'm not really, I don't really have a horse in this thing, except for my old teammates, you know, Pavelski and Craig Smith. Like I really want to see them, you know, go deep here in the playoffs. So I'm really rooting for them. You know, Ryan Suter growing up with him, and I just, you know, I'd like to see those guys get rewarded for such great careers. So I just really hope Dallas finds a way here. But yeah, I'm just playoff hockey is my favorite. And that's when you start seeing who, you know, my teammates would always say, like, once you get to the playoffs, you really get to know your teammates, like who they really are as players, because that whole game is just elevated. So it'll be fun to watch. And, you know, I hope the people here, now that we have a team in Utah, like I hope they clue into the playoffs, because that's the best version of hockey, in my opinion. And that's what these people want. They're going to want to see here in Utah, like a good long, like just a deep Stanley Cup run. At some point, I think Arizona, like coming in here, like if you look at their team and you look at their prospect pool, like Bill Armstrong and everybody there has done a really good job of, you know, like creating depth for the future. So this is going to be very interesting to see what happens here in Utah.
Well, thank you so much for giving the insight. We'd love to have you back on again with us as we get closer to the debut of this team and as we see what their first season looks like. Thanks again so much for doing this, Jack. That's also the Jack Skilly podcast. Go like and subscribe that and find that wherever you get your pods. Thanks again so much for doing this. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for your time. I appreciate it.
That was Jack Skilly. NHL veteran, really good stuff there. He hates Instagram skills coaches just as much as the rest of us do. Really insightful stuff, though, talking about teaching hockey IQ and the inability to teach it, but the ability to learn it. That was a really fun and interesting point. And he seems to hold this market in really high regard. I mean, everything he said about Utah, it's hard not to get excited for what yesterday was. If you really haven't seen yesterday, that rally, that gathering that they had there, it was truly phenomenal. And, you know, the way the people of Utah showed out for their hockey team was really great. So thanks to Jack Skilly for joining us. I don't even think, you know, we didn't even get to his career at all. So there's definitely room to have another conversation with Jack down the line. And I forgot to mention this too, 7th overall pick by the Chicago Blackhawks back in 2005, long time ago now, but, still was a very, very good player growing up and, you know, grew up in Wisconsin where, you know, he is cheering for a lot of those Dallas Stars. I can see that with, Pavelski and with Suter there and, Craig Smith, you mentioned. So, we will see if the Dallas Stars can get back on track and go on that long, deep playoff run, because they do have some deserving veterans to potentially hoist the Stanley Cup. All right, so Games tonight. Panthers Lightning is your first one. No Sam Bennett in this one. Series shifts to Tampa Bay. Lineup should be mostly the same for both of these squads here. I'm really looking forward to this. You know Tampa Bay is going to come out hard. It is all about how Florida is able to weather the storm, in my opinion, there. You know Tampa Bay is about to be loud, too, for the other side of this battle of Florida. And it looks like Ilya Sorokin is going to get the Game 3 start tonight between the New York Islanders and the Carolina Hurricanes at UBS Arena. Doesn't look like Islanders may be without forward Matt Martin. Did not take part in a short little practice on Wednesday. So we will see how that goes. Very interesting. Bringing in Sorokin. I mean, this is clearly the right move. You know, Varlamov was really good down the stretch, you know, 6-1, March 28th to April 15th, was just really, really good this season. And you can't even pin the first two games, how they went, on Varlamov. You know, Patrick Roy was saying all along that they knew that they were going to need both goalies and that they were going to use both goalies. But now it is Ilya Sorokin's turn. And part of me thinks that this is a really good thing for the Islanders, not just because they're getting their starter back in there, an elite-level goaltender, but you're on home ice for the first time, and Ilya Sorokin seems to be one of, if not the most popular players on that New York Islanders roster. So now you have him behind your fan base, and he's going to start, and that crowd is probably going to be really good tonight. And that might be enough, honestly, to get the Islanders a couple goals early, get them playing well. And hopefully they can hang on to a lead tonight. So a little bit of news and notes here. David Quinn was let go as the coach of the San Jose Sharks yesterday. Kind of came later in the day, and it was a bit of a surprise. Second coaching firing we've had in the last like two-ish weeks here after the Buffalo Sabres let go of Don Granato and brought on Lindy Ruff. No immediate replacement was named for David Quinn. You know, Sharks finished last in the NHL. We all know that. You know, starting the season 0-10-1 probably didn't help a whole heck of a lot here. Although I have to admit, there wasn't a whole lot that David Quinn could have done that he didn't do. And, you know, this seems like kind of a polarizing firing. He was only given two seasons there to really shake it out, and you could argue that they were the two worst seasons in franchise history, and not because of the coach. This team was structured on paper to do exactly what they did, and then they went out and did it. So that's kind of a tough look for me. I think David Quinn's a really good coach who really didn't get a fair shake in San Jose. And everything that I've heard about everybody that worked with him just said he was a really tremendous person, and that they really enjoyed their time working with him. So it definitely caught not just myself, but a lot of people off guard with that one. I wanted to read this from San Jose just because it almost seemed like they didn't fire him. Quote from Mike Greer, GM of the San Jose Sharks: David is a good coach and an even better person. I would like to thank him personally for his hard work over the past two seasons. So, you know, I know they're friends. You know, I didn't, like I said, I didn't expect it to come this quick. So, you know, unless you don't even have the young pieces in your lineup enough to warrant bringing in a coach, making a coaching change in the vein of what Buffalo did, right? You know, you have all these young stars in Buffalo, like the Cousins and the Thompsons and Dahlin and Power and go on, right? And those guys need to be held more accountable. You have them saying in their postseason media availability that they need to be held accountable more and that they want that, right? So you think about that and you bring in a coach like Lindy Ruff. Now you don't even have the young pieces that have gone through the growing pains of understanding what it's like and understanding that the NHL is a tough league to win in. Frankly, you only have William Eklund in your lineup. Henry Thrun is a good player. So I don't really understand where the disconnect here was with it. Now, my only thought is, and I've been on the David Carl bandwagon since the national championship, really since the World Juniors, but especially since the national championship and seeing him more in the national media and seeing how good of a guy this is, David Carl. You know, I brought him up more than a few times on the show. And unless you know that you are getting someone like that to be the coach, and to be very frank, I don't think you are. David Carr was very, very poignant and clear about being selective about any job he takes. And I don't know that this is a job that he is going to leave Denver for. You know, I know you have Will Smith. You know, you could have the first overall pick in this year's draft, maybe if a couple balls go your way. But to really do this, I don't love the look. I don't love the look here. It is what it is. He is now the ninth coach fired this season. Assistant coaches Scott Gordon, Brian Wiseman, and Ryan Warsawski will remain for the time being. No decision has been made on the coaching staff of San Jose of the AHL. San Jose also announced head athletic trainer Ray Tufts will not return. So just a very interesting situation overall, how that all played out. I don't know who the next Sharks coach is going to be and if a really demanding coach is what you're looking for here. You know how these pendulums swing between players, coaches, and these quote-unquote hard asses, right? So that's the way it goes there, I guess. And maybe we'll find out more about it as we go on here. Little PWHL note, and only one because it is interesting. Montreal beats New York 5-2 yesterday. Ottawa beats Boston 3-2 in a shootout. But with those two results, PWHL New York is now eliminated from the playoffs. And here is why that is important, or here is why that is of note. So once a team is eliminated from the playoffs in the PWHL, they begin earning what are called draft order points using the league's standard point system. The team with the most points at the end of the regular season will be awarded the first overall pick in the draft. Should be a good idea. You know, obviously you're only rolling with six teams here. So, you know, the first overall pick was either going to go to the team that finished last or the team that finished second to last. Now you're ensuring it to the team that played well, the best down the stretch after they knew they were out of that four-team grouping for the playoffs. And look, we all know that the prize at the top of this year's draft is Sarah Filliet out of Princeton and Team Canada as well. And, you know, this should be interesting to see how this goes. If you can really pile up some wins here, New York's next game will be Sunday against Toronto, and then they'll play again Tuesday against Ottawa. So we will see how that goes. They have some time to collect some points here and ensure themselves a very talented player at the draft this year. That's going to do it for our show today. We are going to cut it there. Thanks so much to Jack Skilly for coming on with us. That was really just a tremendous interview. If you didn't hear it, you should have, and go back and listen to it. Yeah, it was really fun talking about Utah, really understanding what it is like from someone who played at the highest level and is now living in a market where you are at the grassroots, you are on the front lines of trying to develop youth hockey, and that is a madhouse, mad world, whatever you want to call it, in and of itself. We all know the madness that is youth hockey. So we thank Jack Skilly a lot for coming on and giving us a little bit of insight into that. Enjoy the games tonight. Panthers, Lightning, Canes, Islanders, two game threes out east, venue changes. We will be back tomorrow morning to recap it all. Thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody.